This is the Austin Life Church podcast. For more information, please visit us at austinlifechurch.com.
So what does that mean to hope in Jesus? Right, it feels pretty churchy, yeah? Like, hey, don't worry, just hope in Jesus. You know, let go and let God. Like, it just feels like something that would be on a coffee mug, you know? That it's like sometimes when life is miserable and you open your cabinet, it's like, hope in Jesus. And you're like, let me just turn that one around and like stick it in the back, you know? Like, it just sometimes feels a little superficial and fake if you're just saying the words. So what does it mean to hope in Jesus? If hope is a certain belief, a certain confidence that tomorrow, the best is yet to come, that there's better on the horizon, to hope in Jesus is to trust, is to believe that better comes by him. That the best which is yet to come is in Jesus, is through Jesus, that he is the giver of a better future. Right? Sean, his hope was that he would survive. The North Star is what gave him hope. He looked to that North Star and he's like, as long as I can find the North Star, then I'm okay. To hope in Jesus is to say, as long as I have Jesus, then no matter what's happening around me, I'll be okay. It'll work out for good in the end, somehow, some way, as long as I've got Jesus. So to hope in him is really to build our lives on his word, on who he is, what he said was true, what he's demonstrated with his life. As long as I have Jesus, take the world, but give me Jesus. As long as he is true, as long as I can trust him, then I know it'll be okay. In Matthew 7, so if you have your Bibles, I want to invite you to turn there with me. Jesus gives us an illustration of what it looks like to hope in him. Matthew is the first book in the New Testament. Right? The Matthew, Mark, Luke, John are known as the Gospels. It's the telling of the good news of Jesus. And so this is Matthew's account of the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. So in Matthew 7, Jesus is concluding his famous Sermon on the Mount, or he's preaching and teaching about what it means to be a part of the kingdom of God. And Jesus says in Matthew 7, verse 24, "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them." That's an important part. Just if you're like, let me highlight some words. Those are some key words. Everyone who hears what Jesus says and follows them, trusts them, lives according to them, will be like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. The rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. Same rain fell, floods came, winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Y'all are all smart people. I'm sure you're aware Jesus is not actually talking about like a literal house. He's not giving, you know, new build construction tips here. He's talking about our lives. The building of a house is the building, the establishing, the setting of our lives on a certain foundation, setting our hope in something that we can stand on and live on, and that when the winds come and when the storms of life come and when the rain comes, I love that Jesus doesn't sugarcoat things. It's not an if. Life will be hard for you, and it will be hard for me. And let me just tell you, it will be hard in ways you never thought would happen. Right? Grief and suffering is real. When that comes, Jesus says there's a wise person and a foolish person. The wise person builds their life on a firm foundation. That when life gets chaotic, it stays put. It doesn't change. It doesn't shift. It doesn't give out from underneath us. The foolish person builds their life, their hope, on something that will shift and change and might also give out beneath us. Jesus says that he is the rock and the firm foundation, that if we build our lives on him, if we place our hope and confidence in a better tomorrow fully on him, that even when life is not good, there will be a better tomorrow because he is sure and certain and will not shift and will not crumble and will not change on us. When we build our lives and our confidence and our hope on graduating college and getting a great job, but then the market crashes and there's no jobs, right? We're still going to be okay because we have Jesus and he promises to take care of us. When we build our lives on a family and a marriage that's going to finally fulfill our dreams, but then that kind of falls apart and it's not at all what we dreamed of, but if we build our lives on Jesus, then even when that happens, okay, I can be okay. This is miserable, but I can be okay. I'm a part of his family, and that's not going anywhere. If I build my life on, man, I've got money to buy my food and to go out to eat and to pay my bills, but then that money dries up or someone steals it from me. But if I build my life on Jesus, he promises to take care of my needs even when this is going crazy, even when this is falling short. So to build my life on Jesus, to hope in Jesus, is to hope that the better day is with him, is in trusting him, is in following his words, is in hearing him and doing what he says. My hope for eternity, look, we all know that death is batting around 100%, right? This life will come to an end. Okay, what next? Right, if my hope is on my performance, my moralism, that's really nerve-wracking. Because I know me. I know how immoral I am. And even if I am moral, what am I measuring my morality up to? You guys? You know, to the person down the street? There's always someone else that's more moral than me. Right, if my hope is in Jesus, then he tells me I'm secure in my eternity, in eternal life with him, not because of me, but because of him. Because his word doesn't change on me. And Jesus is urging us, it's my hope for us to not build our lives, to not place our hope in something that will never, ever, ever sustain, but to hope fully in Jesus, to trust him and him alone. To build our lives on his words. What he says is true. What he says is best. Look, sometimes we're going to look at God's words and we're going to know what it says and our logic is going to go, I don't know how that's going to go well. Like that, I don't get it. Sometimes God's going to tell us to do something and everyone around us, like Job's friends, are like, no, do this. Right? And this makes more sense. I can add this up. A plus B equals C. Right, that makes sense to me. And God's like, no, trust me. And sometimes that's gonna be tough. But this over here, it will never last. As good as it can be, it will fade at some point. And so God's like, trust me. Trust that what's best is through me, is living with me, is following me. Our hope has to be in Jesus. Everything else will change. Everything else at some point will end. Only Jesus remains. If you are a question asker like me, it's hard for you just to see like, okay, cool. Hope in Jesus, right? For me, I'm like, okay, but why? Right? Like, okay, easier said than done, but come on, talk to me. Why should you hope in Jesus today? Right? Why does this, what Jesus said in Matthew 7 some 2,000 years ago, why is that relevant today? Let's go to Luke 24. For what it's worth, if you're a question asker and no one's ever told you that's okay, let me just tell you that's okay. For everyone else that's not a question asker, they're just lying. They have their own questions. This is a safe place to ask questions. Right? God's big enough to handle our questions. You know, God's big enough to handle our imperfections. I think he knows. You know, like if me as a father can look at my kids and expect them to have questions, expect them to have doubts, expect them to not get it all right, God, who's a perfect father, surely I'm not a better father than him, right? Surely I'm not more understanding than him. He knows. He knows our humanity. It's okay. Let's ask our questions. He can answer them. Anyways, sorry, that was nothing to do with this. It was just Luke 24. So this is a story that Luke records about two men who had put their hope fully in Jesus. They had left everything and were following him, but now they were doubting. They were questioning, was that foolish? Was that the right thing, person to hope in? So Luke 24, starting in verse 13. That very day, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about all these things that had happened. All these things, this is immediately following the death of Jesus. So they're leaving Jerusalem where Jesus was crucified and buried in a tomb. And context later tells us this is Sunday, and they're on their way back. They're talking about everything that just happened. While they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. It's an interesting verse, and I'm just going to note that and then move on, because it's not the focus of today, but it's just I just want to acknowledge, that's an interesting verse. What do we do with that? Okay, next time. And he said to them, what is this conversation that you are holding with each other as you walk? And they stood still, looking sad. Like, I love that, like, his question stopped them in their tracks. They stood still and they were sad. One of them said, Cleopas, are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened here in these days? And he said to them, what things? Jesus, come on. And they said to him, concerning Jesus of Nazareth, a man who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word, before God and all the people. And how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped, past tense, that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things happened. So these two men, we don't know their name, but we know that they had placed their hope in Jesus. They heard the Sermon on the Mount, right? Build your life on the firm foundation. Jesus is like, that's me. And they're like, done, we're in. Jesus, we're following you. Our hope is fully in you. But now their hope is gone. Now their hope had been lost. So what happened here? In Genesis, God made a promise to Abraham that for any of his descendants, and we learn later in Romans that his descendants are the ones who have faith in the one true God, like Abraham did. For any of his descendants, he would be their God and they would be his people. And he promised Abraham and eventually on to Moses that he would prepare a land for them, a kingdom without end, flowing with milk and honey, and it would be heaven on earth. That was the promise that God gave to anyone who would follow after him. But you see, the problem was that for the last millennia or so, since these people here are talking, that's not been their experience. There's been constant war and turmoil and death and suffering and confusion and doubt. Right? God said, hey, I will lead you to the promised land. And these guys are like, okay, where is it? Isaiah 8 gives a good picture of what they were living in. You don't have to turn there. I think the verses will be here. Isaiah 8. They will look to the earth. They are, it is Israel. They are those who have followed the way of Abraham and have placed their faith in God. They will look to the earth, but behold, distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish. And they will be thrust into thick darkness. So these two men, Cleopas and the other guy, are like, hey, God promised a home, a flowing of milk and honey, the promised land, abundant life. But for the last millennium, we've been living in gloom of anguish, thick darkness. But God gave them a promise. God gave them hope. We continue in Isaiah chapter 9. He said, starting in verse 2, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shone. You have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as with joy at the harvest, as they are glad when they divide the spoil. For the yoke of his burden and the staff for his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. For every boot of the tramping warrior in battle tumult and every garment rolled in blood will be burned as fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. So God promises, hey, I'm going to lead you to a kingdom with no end, to a home and a land of peace and flourishing and abundance. But they're like, hey, there's just darkness and anguish. What's going on, God? Now, to give God credit, there's darkness and anguish because God said go right, and they're like, we're going to go left. Right? God said, hey, trust and follow me, and they're like, cool, but I'm going to do my own thing. But that's why they're living in darkness. But God gives them a promise, and he says, hey, one day there's going to be born a child, a Messiah, the Wonderful Counselor, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Prince of Peace, and that Messiah will be the light to the world and will lead you out of darkness and into abundant life. You're living in darkness now, but I promise you there's one coming, the Messiah, who will deliver you from this darkness. And so for years and years and decades and generations, they waited in hope for this Messiah. This promised one was their North Star. As long as they could keep their eyes on this promise, they were okay. And then a son was born. A baby was born. Emmanuel, God with us. And Jesus promised and said, I am the Messiah. I am the one that Isaiah spoke of. I am the light of the world, and the darkness cannot overtake me. Trust me, follow me, build your life on me, and I'm a firm foundation for all of eternity. And so Cleopas and this other guy and the disciples, they were like, yes, Jesus is the Messiah. Their hope was manifest. There was no more waiting for that better day. It was here. He was here. And Jesus told the disciples, hey, if you want to follow me, follow me. Leave everything and follow me. They left everything. They gave their whole lives to following Jesus. They built their whole lives on Jesus as the foundation. He was their complete answer, and then he was dead. Wrap your mind, put yourself in those shoes. How many people had they seen die and then not be dead again? Their hope was completely gone, crushed. They built their life on Jesus, and he let them down. You ever felt that way? Anyone else ever been in a time of darkness where you think, God, I don't want to say it, but I'm thinking it. You know it anyways. You're lying to me. This can't be true. This can't be real. Where the heck are you? You told me to hope in you and to build my life on you, and you are not coming through. This is where they are, and it makes sense. I get it. But they didn't see yet. Their eyes weren't opened yet to the miracle of who Jesus really is. Verse 22. They go on and they say, some women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back saying that they had even seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And Jesus said to them, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. I don't think I sent you the slide, Sarah, but I'm going to keep reading anyways. So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he were going to go further, but they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent." So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at table with them, he took the bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And he vanished from their sight. Then they go on and tell others about what they'd seen. Their hope was crushed because they thought that was the end. But then their eyes were opened to see that Jesus was alive. And if Jesus is alive, then their hope is alive. If Jesus is alive, the firm foundation they built their life on is still a firm foundation. And there is promise for a better day that is yet to come. Their hope is alive again. Because Jesus was, in fact, alive. Okay, what does this have to do with you and me? Again, it's so easy to read this and go, well, shoot, if I was Cleopas, it'd be a lot easier to build my life on that foundation. Or what does that have to do with you and me today? There's some key truths that cause Cleopas and the other to lose hope that are impactful for you and me today. One is what Jesus said, that it was necessary for the Son of God to die, to suffer and to die. They didn't see how a Messiah could win by dying. They didn't see how life could be gained by being lost. And so Jesus said it's necessary for the Son of God to suffer and die. Why? Why is the cross necessary? Why can we not have Christmas but also not look to the cross? God created you and me to have a relationship with him. God created you and me to live in the promised land, in a kingdom that does not end, to walk in a relationship with him, to not have doubts of faith, to not have uncertainties about is that God's voice or not, to not know where is God in all this. God created us to be intimately connected with him. But just like the Israelites who were living in darkness because God said, trust and follow me, and they said, hey, I got a better idea, I'm going to do my own thing, we've all done the same. Not a single one of us. And even if you're here today and you're like, I don't know that I'm a Christian, or my friends are not a Christian, or my... Every human being knows they're not perfect. We all know that whatever the mark is, we come up under it at some level, right? That we can't be in the presence of God that way. If God is perfect and holy and sinless, we can't dwell with him if we are sinful, if we have a record of debt against him. And so it was necessary for Jesus to come and suffer and die so that our record of sin could be settled. He suffered and died in our place so that your guilt and my guilt, he could suffer the punishment for. It was necessary for the Messiah to suffer and die so that our sins could be forgiven. The other thing that they didn't grasp was that the kingdom that Jesus came to bring was not an earthly kingdom, but was a heavenly spiritual kingdom. Revelation 20 says that Jesus is preparing a new heaven and a new earth. That's the kingdom that Jesus came to bring and to establish. They were thinking that Jesus, the Messiah, came to overthrow Rome and reestablish them as a world power. And so when their Messiah dies, they're going, how does this work? How does a dead king lead a kingdom without end? What they miss is that God's kingdom is not just in first century Jerusalem. God's kingdom is an eternal kingdom that is for all people in all places and all times. That includes you and me. The fact that Jesus suffered and died and that he's coming to bring a new kingdom is relevant for you and me as well. And it's because Jesus rose from the dead that our hope in that kingdom is alive. That's where my hope in Jesus rests. Jesus came as a baby. God came as a human. And that matters. And Jesus died on the cross and was buried, and that matters. But if Jesus never rises from the dead, none of that matters. What's the point? But because Jesus rose from the dead and ascended to heaven, the Bible teaches that he is alive today, thus making his death and his kingdom relevant to us today. The invitation to be a part of his kingdom is for you and me today. We can hope in him today because he is alive. That's what happened in Luke 24. They saw Jesus is alive and their hope was resurrected. And they knew, okay, the best is yet to come. And it's fully found in trusting and following Jesus. There's a number of things that you're going to hope in your life. Today even. That you have a confident expectation that there's better tomorrow because of this. But everything else will eventually fade except Jesus. He is the light of the world that gives us meaning for everything. That is a sure promise that we can trust and build our life on. It's a tragedy when we place our hope in good things that will eventually fade. My desire, God's desire, this Advent season is that our hope will be in Jesus alone, the light of the world in which darkness cannot overcome. And we look to the resurrection. We look to the fact that the tomb was and is empty, that Jesus revealed himself to over 500 eyewitnesses, that he ascended to heaven still very much alive, and because he is alive today, our hope in him is alive. When the storms come, when the rain waters rise, we're just trying to keep our head above the water. If we're built on the firm foundation of Jesus, if our hope is fully in him, we will not be put to shame. He will work good for all who build their lives on him. The first candle that was lit as you came in is the Christ candle. And then each Sunday we'll light a new candle to represent different attributes that Christ brings and gives to us. Jesus came, and with Jesus, he brought hope. I hope this will light. And with the resurrection of Jesus, it's a hope that will never fade, that will never burn out, that will never die. Trust him. I pray that God will open our eyes even more today to see that he is for you, that he is good, that he is our only sure and certain hope, and that life will have storms and tumultuous seasons, and the good things in our world that we oftentimes put our hope in will fade and give way, but he will never change. He will never shift. He will never give way beneath us. We build our life on him. It is certain and firm. Jesus came and he brought us hope. May we trust him and build our whole lives on him.
Thanks for tuning in to the Austin Life Church podcast. To help support us, please take a second to rate and review us on iTunes and visit us at austinlifechurch.com.